ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
Today we're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 9th canto, 3rd chapter, entitled The Marriage of Sukanya and Chyavanamuni. Text 11.
Kasyachit vata kalasya nasata vastra magatau tau pujajitva provacha vayo me dattamishvarau kasyachit.
After some time.
To.
But.
Ata.
In this way.
Kalasya.
Time having passed.
Nasatyao.
The two Ashvini Kumaras.
Ashrama.
That place of Chyavanamuni.
Agatao.
Reached.
Tao.
Unto those two.
Pujayitva.
Offering respectful obeisances.
Provacha.
Said.
Vayaha.
Youth.
Me.
Unto me.
Dattam.
Please give.
Ishvarau.
Because you two are able to do so. Translation purported by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Translation. Thereafter, some time having passed, the Ashvini Kumara brothers, the heavenly physicians, happened to come to Chyavanamuni's ashram. After offering them respectful obeisances, Chyavanamuni requested them to give him youthful life, for they were able to do so. Purport. The heavenly physicians, like the Ashvini Kumaras, could give youthful life even to one who was advanced in age. Indeed, great yogis with their mystic powers can even bring a dead body back to life if the structure of the body is in order. We have already discussed this in connection with Bali Maharaja's soldiers and their treatment by Shukracharya. Modern medical science has not yet discovered how to bring a dead body back to life or bring youthful energy to an old body. But from these verses, we can understand that such treatment is possible if one is able to take knowledge from the Vedic information. The Ashvini Kumaras were expert in Ayurveda, as was Dhanvantari. In every department of material science, there is a perfection to be achieved. And to achieve it, one must consult the Vedic literature. The highest perfection is to become a devotee of the Lord. To attain this perfection, one must consult the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is understood to be the ripe fruit of Vedic desire, of the Vedic desire tree. Nigama kalpa taror galitam palam.
Om Ajnana Timirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhan Vitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dinabandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanchakalpatarubhyascha Kripasindubhyayavacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
Good morning, everybody. Before I begin, I would like to request all of you, and especially the senior most devotees, for your blessings, that I may speak something which is in line with our Guru Parampara, which is beneficial and purifying to our hearts, and that our hearts become fertile ground for this sublime message to take root on. So today's verse, we're hearing about the desire to be young. In the Sanskrit, we are hearing here how Chyavanamuni is addressing the Ashwini Kumaras as Ishvarao. Ishvarao has the ending of, you know, the dual indicative. And it's addressing them as Ishvaras. You know, you two Ishvaras. Prabhupada here translates it, because you're able to do so, because you're able to give me Vayod me dattam. You're able to give me youth. Please give me youth. Chyavanamuni, we've been hearing, he was old. He had a beautiful young wife. So he wanted to enjoy. He wanted to be young again. And the Ashwini Kumaras, it is said here, they had the power to do it. We will hear later on, you know, how they had this special vat in which, you know, they could just sink him in and bring him back to that. And Prabhupada begins here by talking about how not only are the yogis able to... Okay. Not only are the Ashwini Kumaras, you know, but also yogis, they are expert at bringing people youthful life and also bringing the dead back to life if the body is in a certain state. And Prabhupada here gives the example of Shukracharya, who was able to get some of Bali Maharaj's people who had died in battle, but they still had a complete body. He was able to make the bodies fit again so that the soul could come back into the body. So basically, the idea is that if there is a body that has the requisites to hold life, then it will be able to bear a soul in it. That's how he was able to bring the dead back to life. If the body is no longer useful, then, you know, it can't do it. And Prabhupada says here how, you know, modern medical science has not yet discovered how to bring a dead body back to life or bring youthful energy to the body. But they're trying. And boy, are they trying. We hear about all of these anti-aging creams, right? The collagen, you know, vitamin E, aloe vera. They put so many things in it. Now, they're also trying with quantum dots so that they can deliver in the specific place where they can do... It's really all about, you know, like, how can we get, you know, all of this plasticity back into the face and like that. And this is a multi-million dollar industry, but it doesn't just go beyond that. It goes beyond that. It's okay, sometimes it's just like, it doesn't matter how much cream you put, you know, you just got to go for plastic surgery. And then, you know, it's like stretching here and here, and sometimes it's successful and sometimes it's not. And when it's not, then people look very interesting after that. But it doesn't stop there. Then you have things like stem cell research. Has anybody heard about stem cell research? It's a big hot topic in biology. Because stem cells are those cells that can turn into any other cell. You know, once you have a skin cell, it's a skin cell, that's it. And once you have a muscle cell, it's a muscle cell. But these stem cells are the type of cells that the fetus has and that can turn into any other cell. So they're trying to see, okay, maybe we can get some of the cells of a person and turn them back into stem cells and then turn them into something else. So everything just to get, you know, what you want again, which is youth. Then you have also cloning, and then there's all the questions about cloning. When you, they're talking about, well, maybe you can create a clone of yourself, so that you can get maybe like a liver if you need it afterwards, so that you can get a heart if you need it afterwards, and there won't be the problem of the rejection of the organ because it's your own. It's exactly like yours. So this cloning has all the big things that goes with it, which is like, well, can you grow somebody so that they can give you the organs that you need? So it's a big big thing in law right now. Then there's also the hyperbaric chambers. What is it? Michael Jackson used to use that, you know, to like maintain youth. And then there is the cryogenics. It is said that who was it? It was Walt Disney, you know, the creator of Walt Disney World and, you know, Mickey Mouse and all that. He decided to put his body into a cryogenic chamber, which is to freeze it so that, you know, maybe in some future it would be brought back to life, and so that they could by that time they would have enough technology so that they could solve all of his problems of old age. So we're trying, and eventually we may get to some of these things because it's material science. All of this is just material science. They're just trying to do it. The Ashwini Kumaras and Shukracharya, they were able to perform it at a very subtle level. These scientists, they're trying to do it at a grosser level, but it's still just material science. Prabhupada is here, interesting, you know, he says that in every department of material science, there is a perfection to be achieved. And to achieve it, one must consult the Vedic literature. So, if one wants to get the highest material perfection, we should go to the Vedic literature. That's where we can find it. And in fact, the Bhaktivedanta Institute for Higher Studies is trying to use this knowledge of the Vedas, but it's trying to use it to show the power and the relevancy of the scriptures. Why? Because back in the day, you know, in the Vedic times, people used to listen to the Munis because they had power, right? Because there was something very tangible that they could deliver. You know, Vasishtha Muni, Vishwamitra Muni, Atri Muni, Marichi, they all had these great mystic powers. But what did they do with them? Did they just try to give people more enjoyment? No, they preached devotional service. People were listening to them because they were saying like, oh, so this thing that you're talking about is actually true because, you know, there are some of these powers. So, you know, some time ago we created a mathematical model of the gunas. Now, we've been hearing about the gunas for a long time, right? Everybody knows, yeah, sattva, rajas and tamas, and, you know, the different foods and everything like that. But when you turn it into mathematical language, then you can speak to people at a different level. It's like, oh, really? What is that you got there? And especially when we used that mathematical model to create a mathematical model of the buddhi, of the intelligence, and tied it in, well, what is the intelligence? What is the functions of the intelligence? Anybody? Discrimination. Knowing what's to do, what not to do, right? Well, there's a branch of science that is called decision-making theory. Yes, there is such a thing. And basically it's economists, psychologists, computer scientists, and neuroscientists that come together to try to figure out how we make decisions and how we can make the best decisions. So what we did is we took the mathematical model of the gunas, plugged it into one of their models, which is already researched. And now you had a mathematical model of the buddhi, basically. But we didn't call it like that. We just called it, you know, some other more technical term, where it was to show how the modes of material nature can tell you how you make decisions. Now this was like, oh wow, that's very interesting, you know. And we had a lot of questions about it, you know, when we went to a conference on the Society for Judgment and Decision Making. And we presented a poster presentation with that. And the scientists were interested. Like, wow, this is a new way of looking at it. For them, it was like revolutionary in some way. For us, it's like, yeah, you know, we know that. But now, the message behind it all was, if you want to be the most rational decision maker, you have to come to Sattvaguna. That was the end point of it, you know. If you actually want to be the most rational, because if you go into rajas and into tamas, you're going to make decisions that are not the most rational. And we showed it with computer simulations. You know, now it's bona fide. Now it's bona fide. So this idea of bringing the scriptures, the Vedic scriptures, into the relevancy of this, makes it possible for people to hear, not just about the how to make decisions and like that, but actually of, well, what else is there in the Vedas? Well, there's devotional service, and actually that's the main part of it. And now you can speak, you know, about the glories of Krishna. One important thing that this verse is telling us here is how the time factor is working on us. You know, the time factor is very subtle. If you look at the time factor, you can't see it. You can maybe see the ticks of the watch or the clock, you know, going. But that's not really time. That's just movement of some sticks. Time is going even if you break that watch. You can't hear it. You can't smell it. You can't touch it. You can't smell it. It's beyond all of these senses. Yet it is working. It is working in the most subtle way. Day by day, you know, it's changing our bodies. Day by day, it's eroding the mountains. Day by day, it's extinguishing the sun. And we can't even perceive it. One day we just wake up and go like, oh my God, who's that person in the mirror? We don't recognize it, that person anymore. You know, who's that old man in the mirror? You know, bring back the other one. You know, I like the other one better. No bringing back. And that's the difficulty about the time factor, and is that it's an energy of the Lord that is just pushing things into a state that we do not want. It's not that it is said that in the spiritual world that time is absence is conspicuous by its absence, but it's not that there is no time in the spiritual world, because we hear that in the spiritual world, you know, that Krishna has, you know, the different pastimes in the different times of the day, right? We hear that there is also different seasons. So time goes there, but it doesn't have that effect of bringing in the unwanted change. It doesn't have that thing of, you know, making people old, of having people die. These are things that we do not want. What was that? When I was little, I wanted to have a tricycle. When I had a tricycle, I wanted a motorcycle. When I had a motorcycle, I wanted a car. When I had a car, I wanted a plane. And when I had a plane, I wanted to be young again. I wanted to be young again. We spend the first years of our life just wishing and praying and hoping, when is that time going to be when I'll be old enough to do what I want? You know, we count the days and the months and the years to go like, well, you know, when can I be old enough to like have a motorcycle or get in the, or have my license to go in a car and just go, you know, just when will I be old enough to just like go out with my friends and not have to like, you know, hear my parents and like that? When will I be old enough to just like travel the world and do whatever I want? You know, when will I be old enough to like stay up after 10 p.m.? You know, we want it so much. And then there's a time in which we're just like so busy, you know, either with studies or working, taking care of a family, just like so busy. And then one day we wake up and it's like, wow, you know, life's over. You know, it's like high noon, and you know, what do we do? It's in some ways the youthful desire is there because it's also in Krishna. You know, you hear how, you know, what is the special thing about Bahulashtami? Bahulashtami is that day when Krishna and Balaram, well, especially Krishna, they finally get the chance to like, okay, now let's take the cows and go. We're going to go places now. You know, now we're going to have real fun. Because when they're near Nanda and Yashoda, they're taking care of them, and that's very nice and all. But, you know, you're kind of restricted, you know. Now you can get to have like real adventures when you go out far into the forest, you know, with the cows. Now Krishna can also have the secret rendezvous with the gopis that he can't have in the day generally, you know, when he only at night. So now Krishna, you know, he gets, so there's that desire in all of us, but Krishna doesn't get old. He's the eternal youthful son of Nanda Maharaj. Krishna doesn't get baggy eyes. Krishna doesn't start having like us, you know, when we get old, it's like teeth start getting loose, digestion goes, now you can't eat your favorite foods, you can't even eat after a certain time of the day, you know, it's just like no, too much like that. You sleeping becomes a problem, the hair goes, the memory goes, you know, everything aches. Just terrible, you know. It's generally what we have to look forward to, and we see it in other people, but it just doesn't sink in until it starts really happening. At a certain point, if you fall, just a simple fall can mean the life and death. You know, most people they die because they started with a fall that just got complicated, you know. And I was once trying to create a PowerPoint presentation for preaching purposes, and I was trying to find the quotes on old age, you know, where it really shows that you know, real raw old age, you know, miseries. Want to know how many quotes I found? One. And after looking like so much about it, in all of the internet, I couldn't find quotes about old, you know, the miseries of old age. Everything was about, you know, you're only as old as you think you are. I mean, come on, really? Like, it's just like it doesn't exist. It doesn't exist. I'm not old. It's not possible. You know. There were no quotes about old age other than, you know, like, you know, all of these quotes were just encouraging you that, no, you're still young. You know, there were pictures of an old lady like that with a shadow that was like a little girl going around skipping like that. It's like, I mean, yes, in the truest sense, you know, the soul is eternal, it's ever youthful, but not the body. And you're really going for the body. So we're really trying to cover our eyes so much that it's not happening. I'm not old. You know, let's dye our hair, you know, a couple different colors until, you know, and let's try to put on caps after a while, because, you know, there's no more hair to dye, you know. It's all about, like, it's not happening. I'm still young, you know, I'm still strong. There was a disciple of Srila Prabhupada, very dear disciple, Ujjasvat Prabhu. Anybody met him? He's an incredible devotee. He used to be one of the devotees from the 55th Street in New York. He was Afro-American, and he used to tell us, you know, how when he was in school, you know, people used to say that he had skin like a Hershey bar. Hershey bar is like, you know, chocolate. So he had smooth as a Hershey bar. And he was like very strong. And he used to lead a kirtan, you know, powerful kirtan. He had big strong arms and just like go around in Harinam. And Ujjasvat Prabhu, he said that, you know, he was also one of the people from the Nrisingadev team. What is the Nrisingadev team? In those times, a lot of crazy people used to come to the 55th Street. A lot of crazy people. So whenever there was one that was like especially, you know, troublesome, they would have to call, Nrisingadev, Nrisingadev, Nrisingadev. It was the alarm. And so all of these, you know, really tough brahmacharis would come running down, you know, to beat up the, you know, whoever was there and throw him out into the street. So he was one of those, you know, Nrisingadev team devotees. And he said, I was trying to fool old age. You know, I was just like, you know, doing lots of exercise, you know, I'm going to be fit, I'm going to be like one of those, you know, really strong old man, you know, old age is not going to get me. And then he said that he got this stroke. And that stroke affected his brain. And after that, he wasn't the same. You know, his movements were slow. His speech was slurred. It was difficult for him to like be able to put sentences together. After he had such a piercing tongue, you know, he was one of those temple commanders that could just make you do things whether you wanted it or not. After that, it was like so difficult. He said, you know, like hit old age started hitting, and he, you know, gained weight. Every time that he was getting angry again, he would start getting like this thing on the back of his neck where it's just like, okay, Krishna, I get it. Don't become angry. But his power, so old age got to him, but you could see in his life that he attained something much, much more than that, something deeper. When you would hear his classes were like hearing Prabhupada. They were simple, but they were so to the point. You know, they just hit you right in there. And one of the things that he used to love to say was, you know, some people would to challenge him sometimes, because he would say like, I just want to go back to the spiritual world. I just want to have smoking kirtan with Narada Muni. You know, I want to hear that vini of his. He called it vini. I want to hear that vini of his. I want to have a smoking kirtan. And some people would challenge him like, hey Prabhu, but isn't it, you know, more advanced to want to come back again and again, you know, and help the conditioned souls? So like, you do whatever you want. I want to go back to the spiritual world. If Krishna wants to send me back, that's okay. But first I want to have that smoking kirtan in the spiritual world with him. And he said, you know, I'm just waiting for that Vaikuntha train. He said, I'm just waiting for that train to come. Close my eyes, open my eyes, kingdom of God. He was waiting for that. It is said that he actually passed away during in the early morning hours during Brahma Muhurta time. And he was reading some prayers to Lord Chaitanya. Passed away in, I think it was Arizona, a couple of years ago. So he must be up there having a smoking kirtan with Narada Muni, hearing that vini. Prabhupada says here that the highest perfection is to become a devotee of the Lord. And that to attain this perfection, one must consult the Srimad Bhagavatam. We hear that this is the highest perfection, but why is it the highest perfection? Because once you become a devotee, that means no more birth, no more death, no more old age, and no more disease. You know, janma karma cha medibhyam evam yo veditat vataha tyagvatiham punar janma naiti mameti sorjuna. We do not have to come back. You know, how many times have we been old? How many times have we lost everything? How many times have we cried bitterly, you know, because we've had to leave everything behind, including our loved ones? In the Vedanta Sutras, it is said that we are afraid of death because we've experienced it before. We've experienced it before, so that is where this fear of death comes from. But a devotee is no longer afraid of death. A devotee no longer has to think about old age again, because Krishna says that we will go back to him. And once we get there, we're not going to come back. We're actually going to get the eternal fountain of youth, because we'll be associating with the eternal youthful boy of Nanda Maharaj. The examples of this perfect devotee is the Goswamis of Vrindavan. The Goswamis of Vrindavan had everything. We hear how Rupa and Sanatan, they were living in Ramkeli, and they had it all. They had youth, but not only youth, they were beautiful. Because sometimes, you know, we may be young, but not so beautiful. But they said that they had beauty, you know, incredible beauty. They had knowledge. They knew all the scriptures. And they could speak so many languages, including Persian, Sanskrit, Bengali. It is said that they also had so much power, so much influence. They were the ministers, the prime minister and the home minister of the Nawab Hussein Shah. They had money. Boy, did they have money. They were able to create a special Vrindavan in the where they were at. You know, creating beautiful gardens and beautiful assembly houses where they would invite all of the learned Vaishnavas to come in and speak from the Srimad Bhagavatam. They had all of this. And nobody was rivaling them. The Nawab Hussein Shah was begging them to stay when they were thinking about leaving. He was treating them like his own brothers. But they left it all. They left it all to come here, to Sri Vrindavan Dham. And in here, they didn't have any more, you know, nice facilities to enjoy. He was sleeping under trees every single night, under a different tree. The nice royal robes that they had there, give it all up to put on just loincloth. Not even like nice loincloth, you know. It was the discarded cloth that the Brijabasis, you know, they would throw away, they would take that and they would make it into copans, and that's what, and in the winter they would have just like this torn old blankets. That's all they had. But they were so happy. They were no longer eating the fine foods of the Raj. They were getting just some, you know, dry rotis, you know, and some roasted chickpeas here and there, you know, that's much. Sometimes not even that. When Sanatan Goswami was taking care of Madan Mohan, he was just getting sometimes just some flour, you know, getting some Yamuna water, making a patty, you know, and toasting it over fire and giving it to him. The Lord had to ask him for a little salt. Because he didn't even have salt. You know how difficult it is to eat something that is unsalted? It's quite difficult. Sanatana Goswami, you know, that's the best thing he had. That was what he was giving to the Lord. That's what he was eating. You know, that's all he could get. But he was happy. We hear how Gopal Bhatta Goswami, he was in the same category. He was doing all of this, but he had one of his disciples build the Radha Govinda temple. 7 stories. The biggest wonder here in India. Beautiful architecture. It was so magnificent that it said that the Muslim emperor came just to destroy, you know, this thing, because he couldn't believe that a Hindu temple could be so beautiful. He had to destroy it. It was so beautiful. And he was, and Radha Govindaji was getting so much nice foods and everything, all by the mercy of Gopal Bhatta Goswami, who had his disciple do it. But Gopal Bhatta Goswami, what was he doing? He was living simply. It is said that was Raghunath Bhatta Goswami. I'm sorry, that was Raghunath Bhatta Goswami. Gopal Bhatta Goswami, he was staying in a little hole. It is said that his bhajan was in this little hole that you had to crawl into. And it's totally pitched dark. You can't even sit up in that place. What to speak of standing up, or, you know, and in that place you can barely breathe. But he would spend months in there just chanting the holy names. He was so absorbed in that, in the remembrance of Krishna, in his holy names, that he would just spend months at a time. These devotees, they were showing us by their example that the highest perfection, the highest thing that you can ask for, is devotional service. To have that prema that only comes about when we become the humble servants of the servants of the servants of the Lord. When we have that simplicity of heart that, my Lord, I don't want anything for myself. I only want to serve you. And knowing that Krishna's heart is in serving his devotees, pleasing his devotees as much as we can. Being that humble servant of them. Even in those difficult situations when it's like, oh my God, okay. False ego, please get out of the way. You know, this is painful, but I just have to do it. Even in those times, just doing that, Krishna becomes so pleased. Krishna doesn't care anything for our mystic powers, for our youth, beauty. He's got so much beauty. How much beauty can we have in these, you know, like pathetic little human bodies? You know, it is said that the denizens of heavens are, you know, hundreds of times more beautiful than us. And the denizens of Vaikuntha, thousands of times more than these demigods. And the residents of Goloka Vrindavan, millions of times more beautiful than the ones of Vaikuntha. And of all the residents, who's the most beautiful? Krishna. and Radharani.
Both of them, they're so beautiful. So what does Krishna want with our beauty? It's nothing. What does he care about our wealth? We have nothing. The best cars we can think of. What is it like? Rolls Royce, Lamborghini, you know, Ferrari. They're all made of metal and plastic and rubber. They don't even have jewels in them. You know, marble, jewels, and gold. At best, you can have gold plated, but not solid gold. You know, imagine an engine made of solid gold. Well, I don't think it would help because the engine gets heated up and it would melt. But anyway, that's a technicality. Our money is nothing for him. But he cares about one thing. The one thing that attracts him more than anything is our humility. Our desire to be the servant of the servant of the servants. It is said that when Rupa and Sanatana Goswami came to Lord Chaitanya for the first time, with straw between their teeth and a scarf around their neck, they prostrated themselves in front of them, telling him how they were the most fallen. How actually Jagai and Madai were not as fallen as them because they had never served the rulers like the Nabu Sain Shah. They were saying that to be able to get his mercy, it was like a dwarf trying to touch the moon. And they were not just saying this out of poetic, you know, rendition, you know, something that, oh yes, you know, because we are so learned, we can create all these wonderful poems. No. Lord Chaitanya is the Antaryami. He's a super soul. He can see in everyone's heart. He could see they are actually humble. They are actually desiring this mercy because they actually feel this way. He saw that in their hearts. And because of that, he was saying, please stop. Please stop. Your humility is breaking my heart. He was so pleased with them. When they were living in Jagannath Puri with Haridas Thakur, one at a time, Haridas Thakur and Rupan Sanatan, they would not go into the Jagannath temple. They wouldn't even dream of going into the Jagannath temple because they thought that they were too fallen. In fact, Sanatan Goswami decided to go around, you know, when he was going to go see Lord Chaitanya because he was invited to lunch. I mean, imagine you get invited to lunch by Lord Chaitanya. Oh my God, it's like, you know, you run there and you get as fast as you can. And he had two ways of doing it. One was through the beach and the other one was through the main road which went through the Singhadwaram. He went through the beach. And when he got there, he had blisters on his feet. Blisters. It wasn't something that it was like, oh, okay, you know, my humility is just, you know, like speak. No, he actually had blisters because it was so hot, and he knew that the sand was going to be scorching hot and it was going to burn his feet, but he didn't care because he was thinking, if the pujaris from the Jagannath temple happen to come out at the time where I'm passing by, and they just rub off on me, you know, like that's such an offense, you know, that it's, you know, I can't have that. I'm gonna go through the other way. Lord Chaitanya was crying seeing Sanatana Goswami's humility. Now, this doesn't mean that we have to go, you know, with our bare feet and, you know, start doing these type of tapasya. These are the Goswamis. They are teaching us by their example and we should follow in their footsteps, but we should not try to imitate that exactly. Well, follow in the footsteps in not exactly, you know, in a figurative way. don't actually follow in the path like that. When we try to do that in our simple, humble way, even if we're not able to do as much, Krishna is just happy to see us endeavor. All he wants is to see us endeavor. He doesn't want big results. He gives the results. He decides if he wants to give us big results or not. All he wants is our endeavor. That's all he was asking of Arjuna. And we have maybe 3 minutes in case there are any questions, any comments, any chastisements, or any jokes, whatever. Yes, Prabhu. It's really not there. There's not that much. We can. There's so much in the Vedas that we can, you know, work on instead of, you know, trying to bring the dead back to life. You know, like for example, you know, just the Sushruta Samhita. It talks about how they have like all of these great knowledge to show how you can put a nose back, you know, using a flap of skin, how you can perform things that like surgeries for kidney stones. It has so much, you know, and in ways that are actually beneficial for us. So we can research on that. We can research on things like I was hearing from Kalakanta Prabhu, the minister for agriculture and cow protection. He was telling us how there's some recent research where they found that there's this chemical that is found in milk, which is also found in the brain, and it seems that it's also found in the grass. Interesting, because then, you know, grass, cow, milk, human, brain. You know, so there's a benefit to cow protection. Oh, wow. We could surely use that. We could surely use that cow protection in this age of Kali. So let's try to get that. Let's try to see, you know, if we can research on things like the benefits of Mahamantra. There have been so many studies in terms of the meditation of Buddhists, of Christian nuns, of the impersonalists, but how much is there on the Mahamantra, which can give you much more than just, you know, shanti? Can we show, you know, like that, you know, all of these benefits? So this is interesting research that we want to like pursue in that sense. Yes, please.
When you were speaking about the kirtan, different types of kirtan. So this actually kirtan is always glorifying God. But then sometimes we discriminate that this kirtan is not better should be, this kirtan should. So this discrimination, why you should have that discrimination when it's only glorification of God?
Can you repeat that question again?
The glorification of God is there in kirtan.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes we discriminate.
There's different types of kirtan. Prabhupada said that we should do kirtan 24 hours a day. And he showed, you know, I'm doing kirtan right now, you know, reading Bhagavatam. Doing kirtan, you know, playing like that. Doing kirtan, you know, by preaching out. We have to do kirtan. There's all types of kirtan. And we have to do it 24 hours. You know? Some devotees have a real taste for kirtan and they do 24 hours of just japa. Some others have, you know, of you know, they're constantly preaching. Whenever you're with them, they're constantly preaching. So, you know, according to our taste, you know, we can do all different types of kirtan. More in this, more in that. It's all good. Jai. Srimad Bhagavatam ki. Srila Prabhupada ki. Eternal youthful boy of Nanda Maharaj ki. Jai Gaur Premanande.